Jacksonville youth are under arrest for making gang rap videos. But were they really holding illegal guns on camera? Good morning, and hope you're staying warm out there. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. I'm Alyssa Ross. And just ahead, a look at the controversy surrounding Operation Wrap Up. Give us a call now, 549-2937 to join us. Then later, we've got a preview of the Big Donna Marathon Weekend coming up at the beaches. Plus, it's the debut of our own new podcast here at WJCT, What It's Like. We'll speak with host Lindsay Kilbride. All of that ahead. But first this hour, questions about a police sting that happened earlier this week called Operation Wrap Up. Now, earlier this week, JSO arrested five people accused of illegal firearms possession. They were seen in locally produced music videos holding weapons and seeming to glorify drugs and gang violence. Here's a quick listen.
Dirty nigga polluted, try straight out the sewer. Mean we came from the bottom, turned rapper from robber. Before I got a microphone, I was grabbing them choppers. Back to back in them parlors, gang chill, I should.
All right, but the Florida Times Union reports this morning the main expert police relied on to get arrest warrants for the five pictured in the videos can't say for sure that they were holding real weapons. Now, at the same time, these arrests do point up the ongoing issue of gang violence in Duval and also the lack of opportunities for kids, the issues of not having safe neighborhoods, job training, life skills, access to quality education, and more. We're going to discuss it all right now as we welcome Mick Hallett, professor of criminology and criminal justice at UNF. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also here in studio, Michelle Godfrey Watson of the Jacksonville Job Training Program Refresh Ministries. Hey, Michelle.
Good morning.
We did reach out to both JSO and the state attorney's office. They were not available to join this program this morning, but we do want your calls right now about Operation Wrap Up. Give us a call. What are your questions about this? It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and let us know your thoughts on Facebook, too. All right, Mick Hallett, with great fanfare, the police chief, the sheriff, rather, the mayor and the state attorney stood together on Tuesday at a news conference and announced these arrests. Now we're learning from this morning's Times Union that we don't know if the weapons that were pictured in the videos were actually real illegal weapons. At first blush, what's your reaction to this?
My reaction was, I think you can stipulate that they were real. And, to me, the curious thing about the press conference was that these online gang rap videos, are a rising genre,
right,
for legitimizing and legitimating the actors within the videos. So one of the challenges I think that we face is that if you look at the videos on YouTube, the one in particular that you just played has 30 million hits.
Yeah.
So that what's going on here is that there is a new system of commerce that glorifies violence and that is indigenously produced by gang members in every large city. Washington, D.C., St. Louis, New Orleans, Duval, as we're known, in the YouTube circuit and gang rap videos. So that, I guess the first thing I would say is that there's nothing new about this. I mean, I did a big project at Angola, Louisiana State Penitentiary, where I first became aware of all this, and Aaron Neville, the Neville brothers were incarcerated. They filmed there. There's a good song called Angola Bound. And so this has become a popularized entertainment genre, okay, behind which there is a system of commerce driven by YouTube. So that when a politician or, if you look at the script of these videos and the videography, I mean, it's really quite interesting because what they'll do, what they look for are headlines and news stories. And what you'll find is literally footage of funerals of their own members and rival members, headlines to sensationalize their own legitimacy as bona fide gangsters. Okay. So the problem is that in a funny way, we end up legitimizing them as exactly what they want when we glorify and highlight those videos. So I'm not sure that it was the appropriate response. What's going on here, though, is that—
What do you mean by making the arrests
By highlighting these videos as an example of what not to do. That's exactly the kind of attention they're looking for. It's a kind of branding mechanism.
Okay, getting lots of calls and tweets on this already. It's 549-2937. So two things seem to be happening around this. One, as you are pointing out, this is a serious issue that gang violence is being glorified on YouTube and on social media, and Jacksonville is unfortunately known for this.
Right.
Police have a serious challenge, police and prosecutors, in trying to get their arms around this and deal with this issue appropriately. And they are working very hard on that. At the same time, they're coming in for some criticism, the police and the mayor's office. People are saying they made a big show out of this arrest as a way to grandstand leading up to an election, which is coming up in March. There's a political aspect to this as well. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, to me, the new sort of territory we're in is that YouTube and Facebook have provided localized venues, formats for self-promotion of violence. And what we've got is, you know, criminologists have carefully studied hundreds and thousands of these videos, and there are patterns in the thematic sort of portrayal of so-called gangster life in every large urban city. And it's always a lot of guns, a lot of murder, and a lot of misogyny and sexism and, you know, as you might imagine, foul language.
Right. We couldn't play most of the video.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But the problem is that these videos become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so I think what the police are legitimately concerned about is that there's a pre-scripted agenda set by the very format of the video so that, the young men who are making committing these acts to capture them on film to glorify themselves and put them on YouTube. And there's been a lot of litigation about this First Amendment litigation, you know, to what extent is this a threat or even a kind of terrorism versus, legitimate free speech. And so that debate goes all the way back to the history of blues music. So we're caught in the middle of something very complex and large here. But my first reaction to it was that this only gives them the kind of attention that they seek.
You're more concerned about that than the political questions around the timing of the news conference.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the videos, these videos have been up for months and years. I mean, the one that they highlighted the
other
day.
Then why make the arrest now?
Well, that is a question, and I can't answer that question. But to me, it does also highlight the need for Jacksonville to have a bona fide, standalone, separately funded Miami Children's Trust kind of agenda that transcends mayoral administrations, transcends politics, and can legitimately fund programs that are long term and that have bona fide external evaluations conducted by people without a stake in local politics.
You are saying we need a dedicated funding source,
right,
a permanent program, a permanent initiative to reduce crime rates, gun violence in this city, and provide more opportunities for young people, going beyond what we already have. That attempt was made years ago with the Jacksonville Journey Anti-Crime Initiative. It got mostly defunded. There's now a new task force on crime that's just been assembled.
Yeah.
You're saying we need more than that.
Absolutely. Well, look, I mean, I support the task force. I served on the Jacksonville Journey for 4 years. I was appointed to the management team by Mayor Payton. I served on the management team of the JCCI homicide study. Everybody who, most people, 95% of the people who are involved in that are still around. And so I think that the time has passed. I support always an ongoing conversation on violence in Jacksonville, and I applaud that. But there needs to be an action item. And I interpreted the task force this time as a kind of a way to punt the football beyond the election cycle.
And in the absence of what you're talking about, Mick, a permanent initiative that's independently funded that can really get at the root of Jacksonville's status as Florida's murder capital and our serious issue with crime and violence and gang activity, lots of private efforts have sprung up over the years to try to deal with this. One of them is in studio now. It's Michelle Godfrey Watson. She runs the Jacksonville Job Training Program, Refresh Ministries, Pastor Godfrey Watson. And you have insight into this. Your godson was actually in a gang at one time.
Yes, you are correct. You are correct.
So tell me what motivated you to get involved.
When you see that these young men don't have options, when you see that they actually have some good in them, but their role models may not have been there. This particular young man was in an environment where he was one of 11 siblings. His mom was on drugs, and it was a typical, quote-unquote, case where he was making wrong choices. And it was interesting because when we started the program, and it started out as the Refresh Leadership Academy. When we started the program for the Refresh Leadership Academy, we were talking with another young lady in the ministry, Shanetta Russ. And with Shanetta, what happened was, and I'm going to get into how she got into with this other young man. What happened with Shanetta was she was another person just out there just doing her thing. And then she came to the ministry. And I'm just telling you, each person reaches a person. So Shanetta reached out to this young man, then brought him to the ministry. And then by her bringing him to the ministry, we were able to create a structure for him, create an environment for him that he had never even experienced. We're talking about when he came to the ministry, there was a lot of alcohol abuse, a lot of everything going on, just to, you know. But I want you to understand that it was because of what we presented to him. He was able to now turn his life around. He's been gainfully employed for a number of years. And he actually married Shanetta.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you're having a positive impact.
Yes, ma'am.
And there are other efforts like yours, certainly doing the best they can to reach as many kids as possible.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about Mick Hallett's point that he just made? Do you think the city needs a permanent initiative going beyond what we have to deal with this issue?
I was listening to his comments, and the comment that you made that he talked about, they were legitimizing themselves. They were legitimizing themselves. And what I was thinking about when he was saying that was that they were trying to give themselves a voice. And in giving themselves a voice, it's because they feel that they don't already have one.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find a voice in any area or arena that they can find one in. So do I think that it should be a city? And I think it should be an everyone initiative. I think that it should be everyone involved, especially the nonprofits, the faith-based organizations as well. And that's part of what we're doing.
Let's go to your calls now as police make arrests in a sting they called Operation Wrap-Up. 549-2937. Johnny is in Washington Heights. Hi, Johnny. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. How are you doing this morning?
All right. Thanks. Thanks for your call.
I'm going to preface my comment with a backstory. Currently, right now, I help take care of a child whose father was lost that was in a rap group, and he was lost before the child was born. I also have a family member who rapped at one time that was killed, and, you know, explaining things to him and talking to him, one of the main things that came out to me was when he said, my daughter asked for some French fries, and I couldn't buy the French fries, and it's because of the system that failed them. Now, my comment is that hip-hop from the beginning has been a barometer of social conditions of the time. Art and life go together like French fries and truffle oil. Without proper understanding of the culture, you cannot devise a plan to cause the violence. Your caller was speaking of these rappers and the youth, it's almost condescending, you know, with the legitimizing themselves as gangsters and talking about the gun in their lifestyles when a lot of these kids have no hope. I think gang, with using rap as a context, is a misnomer. These crimes stem from poverty more than rap. There were gangs and illegal economic institutions before rap. There's always been the hip-hop police. And JSO's recent adaptation of these tactics is just indicative of their incompetence and their reactionary practices. And like the rest of Florida, they're late on many fronts to the party. It puts people in jail, but it doesn't solve the problem. And that's my comment. I'll take the
rest. All right, Johnny, thanks. And, you know, and to be clear, the police's job is to make arrests. It's really not on the police to deal with the underlying socioeconomic issues. But I appreciate your thoughts on that, Johnny. And so, Mick Hallett, you run criminology at UNF. You study these issues at a really deep level. These issues are so systemic in Jacksonville and most major cities.
Yeah.
And we talk about this on this program all the time. And as yet, this city has not found the way,
yeah,
the comprehensive way to deal with this.
No question. I thought the last caller made an excellent point. I mean, what you've got is the self-expression of people who otherwise have nothing. I mean, the what we've got in Jacksonville, like every large urban center, is illicit drug market violence anchored by deindustrialized urban ghettos, which have produced a situation where the dominant economy is illicit drug markets. And sadly, those markets are controlled through illicit drug market violence. And that's what we've got. And that's what's glorified in the videos. And there's no doubt in my mind that a systemic program agenda that is permanent and long-term with a strategic plan that can transcend, you know, the prevailing winds of the moment is what we need.
549-2937. Give us a call. John is in Jacksonville. Hi, John. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My first thing is, I want to understand, how is it that JSO can go and arrest somebody because of a video, but have no proof whether or not these guns are real? Number two, we sit up and we deal with, it's almost as we are reactionary. Okay, you're looking at the tree and the branches and the leaves, but you're not dealing with the root of the problem. The root of the problem in Jacksonville, Florida, is that they do not stay consistent with the programs. Now, I heard you talking about the PAL. PAL is underfunded.
The Police Athletic League.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
There's no more boys clubs. I mean, we constantly throwing millions and millions and millions of dollars at policing and putting people in jail, but not doing any type of prevention. Okay. And number three, when we really look at the issue of the young men and the hip hop, listen, America's got 320 million guns on the street. And 90% of them are in law-abiding citizen homes. So the guns on the street are not just popping up on the street. They're placed there. Our penal system is for profit. It is not for rehabilitation. And that is the problem. We can get on here and talk all day long about the reaction. But until we start dealing with the root of the problem, then nothing will change. And the root is, there is no economics on the north side of town. And it's amazing that they can glorify this arrest, but people getting shot in their front yards and ain't nobody being arrested. People getting killed, ain't nothing happening. So, I mean, let's stop the political play. Let's stop all the political correctness and let's speak truth. And that's the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Lots of great points from John. Okay, Michelle, you know, we're getting lots of tweets about this too. Here are just a few. Steven tweets the show, gangs and their videos have been around for years. People of Jacksonville can see this operation for what it is, an election stunt, and a bit too late at that. Here's another tweet from Jason. He tweeted the show a picture of the bluegrass band Grandpa's Cough Medicine. They're a well-known local band, three white guys, and it's a picture of them standing next to a table that is full of assault rifles and guns. And they're pictured with a bunch of weapons. Okay. So Jason tweets the show, are they investigating genres outside of hip hop? Trying to make the point that, the perception is that these arrests were made for, as a way to seem as though the city is really getting serious about the crime issue before the March elections. So there's that issue. But then also, Michelle, as John, the caller, just pointed out, there's no economic opportunity on the Northwest side. There hasn't been for many decades. Kids don't have opportunities. As Mick Hallett pointed out, the city as yet does not have the political will to commit to this in a long-term fashion. The Jacksonville Journey, which was started under the John Payton administration, did make a really comprehensive good faith effort at this. But then the financial crash happened, and a lot of those initiatives got defunded. Right when the journey was actually starting to show some positive effects, which was so unfortunate. And so, you know, here we are again with crime spiking and people trying to figure out what to do once again. When, you know, this was studied exhaustively, we know what needs to be done. We need more prevention and intervention programs for kids, more educational opportunities, more job opportunities, more mentoring. more programs for people leaving prison, job training so that they don't reoffend. We know what needs to be done. In other words, you know what needs to be done, and you're trying to do it.
Absolutely. And I was just so elated when I heard the caller saying the same thing. And that's exactly my point. You know, we're putting a, you put a Band-Aid on a cut, but have you ever actually looked into where the infection started? And when you identify where the infection started, then you're able to solve the root of the problem. And that's what we do. We look to solve the root of the problem. All that other stuff is just the results of what the root was. So mm-hmm. what we're looking to do, even within Refresh Ministries, is the Refresh Leadership Academy has now partnered with Inner City Crew and the WorkNet program. And what we're looking to do is reach out to several of these young men. We've also, we started partnering with a transitional house. And we're going to be having these young men come into the ministry and start teaching job skills, teaching them simple things. How do you tie a tie? Teaching them how to interview, how to write a resume, and giving them options. One of the biggest things that I have always said, the reason people make the decisions that they make is because they've never been given the options that other people have had. If they were given those options, they may have made other choices.
Another John is on the line. He's, I think he's along I-95. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, I'd like to say that we got a lot of really smart kids that are coming up in the world, and it depends on what you put in front of them, what they're going to learn. If you put opportunity, education, you know, that same child who could become an astrophysicist might end up being a gang member because he didn't have the opportunity to learn. And we got to remember that us as adults have to rely on the kids that are coming up behind us in order to take care of us when we're too damn old to do it ourselves.
You know, yeah, really.
We need our kids to be the best kids in the world. And
oh, we lost him. But, John, I appreciate what you're saying. Here's an email for you, Mick, from Clyde. Your guests have practical advice. This is a man-made problem and needs a man-made solution. We can all look at the 50,000-foot view of this, but we need on-the-ground sustained efforts getting involved in young people's lives. Mick Hallett.
No doubt. You know, and sadly in Jacksonville, we keep coming up to the altar, but we don't get married. You know, in other words,
exactly.
You know, I totally agree with the callers that these artists are being scapegoated for deeper structural challenges that we face
the
in every urban
the kids in the
center.
Videos.
Yeah, you know, they're expressing their reality, and we need to wake up to it. But in Jacksonville, time and again, what happens is, you know, someone will stand up and say, well, we can't arrest our way out of the problem, and then in the same breath, that same person will say, but we need more money for more cops. No, we need more money for more programs. We need a sustained effort that funds caseworkers, social workers, early literacy programs, all the things we were doing in the journey. You know, those were mostly early learning, after school programs, team up, a lot of the kinds of things that Orlando just decided to spend $20 million on for I think it was 7 zip codes. It was in yesterday's paper. A lot of major cities are learning the hard way that they need to pay now or pay even more later. And sadly, we are 25 years into the pay more later plan. And so it's time to draw a line and take some bold action.
Here's another tweet from another listener. Kids need outlets. We need programs like spoken word workshops, music, sports, something for kids to get into. I appreciate the pastor, and she needs to look into the Year Up program. Okay, thanks for that. Getting an email from the Anna Brochet campaign. She released a statement about this the other day. She tries to challenge Mayor Lenny Curry. She writes, the press conference was just another political stunt by Mayor Curry and his allies to make it look like they are doing something about crime, when by and large they've neglected the issue for the past 4 years because these violent crimes disproportionately impact the more impoverished areas of the city. So all of this is happening in the context of an election where both the mayor and the sheriff are on the ballot, favored to win, but there are challengers who are criticizing their leadership on this issue. And let's take one more call on this, if we could get him into the queue. It's Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. You know, there's another problem here, and that is the revenue and indebtedness created by an arrest. If you get arrested and they throw you in jail for marijuana, it's going to cost you about $500 in the county jail for 2 hours. Court costs are going to be another $500. If you have to go to a bond person, you're going to be paying 25-30% bond. There's a revenue generating stream for government and the justice system here, and you basically turn the people that you arrest into desperate citizens trying to find some way to pay for their probation. Is $25 every time you go talk to your probation officer. So all that in financial incentive needs to be removed from the Justice Department. They probably should put it in the Justice Fund. I mean, the General Fund and the probation officers, and everybody needs to go apply to it, because there's this hidden revenue for billions or hundreds of millions of dollars throughout the country that is being generated through the arrest of citizens.
Sure. And I think a previous caller alluded to that, too. Daryl, thanks. Particularly in Florida, Mick Hallett, we have a lot of private prisons here.
Right. Well, there's study after study shows that intensive criminal justice engagement impoverishes the already most impoverished portions of the community, so that you've got so-called million-dollar blocks where, you know, 3-4 contiguous blocks of any urban center produces 45% of the prison population, you know. So we really need to wake up. We need to get smart. You know, my friend Kevin Gay calls them zip code prisons. That's what we've got. 32209 is a zip code prison. We need an intensive Marshall Plan agenda, or we're going to continue to lead in homicide and violence.
That is the unfortunate reality. And so we thank you both for sharing your thoughts. Mick Hallett, professor of criminology at UNF, Pastor Michelle Godfrey Watson of Refresh Ministries.
Thank you.
Thank you. And up next, why the beaches will be going pink next weekend. A conversation with Donna Deegan coming up. This is First Coast Connect. Back in a moment.
When Wilson met his first grade teacher, she asked him an innocent question.
What'd you do this summer?
But Wilson didn't have an easy answer, because last summer, he'd been separated from his mom at the border.
Well, I am glad you're here.
Life after family separation. Next time on Reveal, from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Saturday at 3 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
WJCT's new podcast tells the stories of local people.
You have one of your soldiers laying there, and you have the person that is trying to kill your soldiers on the opposite side.
It wasn't so much that I felt guilty. I felt like it was impossible for him to love me.
I wasn't born with a crack pipe in my mouth. Thank you, Jesus. I'm not going to die with one.
What It's Like is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Well, next weekend marks the 12th annual Donna Marathon Weekend. And this year, there are lots of changes to the big event, which, of course, raises funds for breast cancer research and care. People are coming from all 50 states and around the world to our beaches for the Donna Marathon. Founder Donna Deegan, a breast cancer survivor herself, is here to tell us all about this year's big event. Hey, Donna, good to see you.
Good morning. Always good to see you, Melissa.
And if you want to connect with Donna, it's 549-2937. All right. I can't believe this is the 12th annual Donna Marathon. I remember when you started this.
I do too. It seems like yesterday in a way.
I know.
We've had a lot of changes, you know, over the years. And this year really is our biggest one. We've moved everything out to the island this year. And so from the expo to the race, you know, everybody will be able to just stay in our beautiful beach.
You founded this marathon, the only marathon, I think, anywhere that is dedicated to breast cancer research and care, because, of course, as many people know, you are a 3-time breast cancer survivor. I remember when we worked together at First Coast News and you were going through your first bout with cancer and chemo and losing your hair and everything that you went through and you know, so many people have been on this journey with you for a long time. And it's so, true. You know, it's really incredible to see you now looking awesome, so healthy and vibrant and strong and turning your talents to helping other women who are going through this horrible ordeal. You know, it's really inspirational, Donna.
Well, that's nice of you to say. Honestly, I feel like it's been crazy as it sounds, a blessing in disguise to have gone through all of that, because it's given me an opportunity to see through new eyes, honestly. You know, I think that when we go along our regular lives and we don't have challenges like this, sometimes we don't see what other people go through. And I think given the fact that I was on television when I was going through all this, I got the opportunity to hear from all those women who said, you know, gosh, you know, we're praying for you, we're following you, but you should know that, you know, we don't have the same advantages you do. We don't have insurance, or we don't have a way to pay for our medications and for our mortgages. And it was a really eye-opening experience. And as you know, I went through it 3 times. So I know from pretty much every angle of this, from the fear of the disease to really the financial challenges that come along with it, even though I had good insurance. You know, you're facing a mountain of medical bills. So the fact that we have the opportunity not only to push forward some pretty groundbreaking research, but to really, you know, hold a hand out to those people with breast cancer and say, hey, you know, we're going to be here for you so that you don't have to make those crazy choices. It's been really an honor to be able to do that. And I'm just so grateful to this community for supporting us.
I know, because you've got the world-renowned talents of Mayo Clinic involved in research. And you, I did not realize this, you have helped now more than 12,000 families trying to pay for medical bills associated with breast cancer.
That's right.
That's a huge amount of people.
Well, we've been around a while. You know, the foundation was actually formed in 2003. We didn't start the race until 2008. But folks have been wonderful. As I said, you know, I think when people see their neighbors in need, they just have to see the need, and then they'll come out and they'll help. But yeah, 12,000 families. We're very proud of that. And we've actually started a new initiative, Melissa, because we know that a lot of people can't afford to give big amounts of money, and not everybody's a runner. So we've started something this year called the 1912 Society. We broke it down to where we said, okay, if people gave $19 a month, 12 months of the year, so it's our own sustainer program, like you guys have here, right?
Sure.
If they did that, then they could support a family, you know, for that amount of money every year, because we're able to take every dollar that's donated to us and really translate it to 5, the way our care model works. So it's an opportunity to basically adopt a family and say, we're going to be that person that goes out and helps. So we hope that people will get involved in that. And of course we want people to run, but at the end of the day, our primary focus is these families.
Of course. So 12,000 families, and also millions in support to Mayo Clinic and their breast cancer genomics research program, has been raised over the last 12 years by the Donna Marathon. And if you've never been out to the marathon, it's coming up next weekend and the beaches are turning pink. And what else is happening? Lots of changes this year, right?
Oh, lots of changes. And I want to mention really briefly, and you'll hear more about this, you know, as the days go on. But one of the really exciting things about that research at Mayo this year is that we've helped them to receive a machine, a nanostring machine that actually will help. It's one of only a few in the world. that exist that will actually help them to determine how the immune system is involved with breast cancer. And, you know, we've been saying that for years. How can we get the immune system to help breast cancer? So I want people to be excited about that too. And so on both fronts, on both the research front and the family front, I feel like we're helping. But yes, the course is immensely different this year. We're actually starting at what we call our great destination location, the Beaches Town Center, right there by all the fun, you know, food and drink and crazy people are out in those beaches. And so folks will run the half marathon primarily through Atlantic Beach. And then the full marathon course will go along through Jacksonville and Ponte Vedra and all those beaches as well. But yeah, folks have just gone crazy with the decorations and the house parties. As I say, it's a 26.2 mile, you know, tailgate basically is what it is.
Right. And this, by the way, I did not realize this marathon is a Boston Marathon qualifying course.
Yes, always has been. But the nice thing about having taken the course off of the bridge, and the bridge was a beautiful view, right? But it did slow some people down.
And the bridge that goes from Butler Boulevard to
Mayo.
A1. Oh, I'm sorry. The bridge that goes to Mayo Clinic.
Right. So what we've done is the start finish line is now at the Beaches Town Center at Atlantic and Neptune Beach. So we'll start there. We'll run the half marathon through Atlantic Beach and then out into the other beaches and then back and finish right there. Basically in front of the Lemon Bar is where we'll finish.
Where people are probably going to need a drink by the time they're done.
I think they probably will. But no, it's going to be a fan. I think it's an opportunity for people. We loved, you know, finishing at Mayo because of the symbolism there, but it didn't give people the opportunity really to be at the finish line. And now you're going to be able to have just scads of people out at the finish line.
Now, people know that you are a dedicated long distance runner. It's totally intimidating. I could never run a 26 mile marathon.
Don't say never.
I know, never say never. But this really is true. I've done a 5K and that's about as far as I want to go. So what advice do you have for people who, you know, maybe they're not ready for the marathon or even the half marathon, but there is a 5K. They can participate in other ways.
Absolutely.
If they're just getting into running.
There's a 5K on Saturday. So the marathon and half marathon are on Sunday. The 5K is on Saturday. And by the way, the half marathon is about to sell out. And today is the last day before the price increase. So make sure if you want to run the half marathon, get your registration in today. But if you want to run the 5K, that's on Saturday morning and right there at the town center as well. So sure, you can walk that. You can run it. You can do the 1 mile family fun run with your kids. It's just a great way to be involved in a great cause. And the other thing I want to make sure people know, because I heard somebody said that should know better, and I'm not going to name any names and embarrass anyone that's been with us for a long time, that said the other day, I just wish I didn't have to drive all the way into town to get my registration. I said, you're not listening. We're at the Kmart Shopping Center this year for our expo. So
at the beaches.
Yes. So everything is sort of a one-stop shop right there.
Okay. So you can sign up there at the beaches or you can go to breastcancermarathon.com. Register today because, as Donna just said, the registration fees go up tomorrow, February 1st. And the marathon isn't this weekend. It's actually next weekend. You know, let me ask you on another note. Okay, for many, many years, you were known as a news anchor at First Coast News. You then turned your experience with breast cancer into organizing this globally renowned event that has raised millions of dollars. You've got organizational and executive talents. You are certainly a community leader. And over the last year, you got political. You got involved in the gubernatorial campaign of Andrew Gillum, the Democratic nominee for Florida governor.
Yes.
He lost narrowly to our new governor, Ron DeSantis. And so as people watched you step out onto the political stage, I think I'm not the first person to ask you this. Are you considering running for office at some point in the future yourself?
You know what, Melissa? I don't know. Honestly, I'm not going to shut the door on that and say I absolutely wouldn't, because, you know, as soon as you do that, something comes up that looks like maybe you should do it. But I don't have any plans to do that. I got involved in Andrew Gillum's campaign at the very beginning because I'm so passionate about healthcare. I truly believe with every fiber of my being that every human deserves the right of healthcare. And I believe we must move in that direction, whether it's expanding Medicaid in the state of Florida, which I believe we must do, and I hope becomes a ballot initiative this year or next year. And or you know, this whole idea of Medicare for all. And I know it's a hot button issue, but I just believe if every other you know, developed country in the world can find a way to make sure there's a safety net for their folks, then the most prosperous nation on earth should be able to do that. So I am very hopeful that however we do it, and I'm not married to a specific way, but that's really how I segued in, is that I believe very strongly that we need to do better. And if we know better, then we need to do better. And I think we do know better. And so that's really where my focus is.
So it was the experience of dealing with women who could not afford to pay for both their medicine and their mortgage, or their medicine and their car payment. That is what turned you to this issue in a political way.
That's really what first got my attention, to be honest. But beyond that, I'm just really very weary of our political discourse. I think we need to learn to be just more civil and less nasty to each other. And I would like to see that start to change. And I think Andrew Gillum is an amazing talent, and I hope we'll see him back on the political stage soon. But there are a lot of folks out there that are at the very least recognizing that we need to change the dialogue, or we're just not going to get anywhere.
You know, it's really remarkable how public opinion has moved on this issue of whether healthcare should be a right for everyone in this country.
Almost 70% of people polled believe that it is.
Yeah. And so with that as the backdrop, this marathon, whatever your political beliefs or how you believe healthcare should be accessed and delivered, the thing about this marathon is that if you participate, you are helping a private effort help local people, help people access medical care, life-saving medical care, help them keep their families together while they go through breast cancer treatment. And so, you know, wherever you stand politically, this is something everyone can support.
You know, I hope so. And I did get some pushback during the campaign of people who said, you know, we don't want to support what you're doing because you've taken a political stance. And that is absolutely everybody's right to feel that way. But my feeling is every nonprofit is out there trying to do everything they can. And as far as healthcare goes, you know, we're sticking our finger in the dike at this point. And I'm very grateful for people who are coming out and supporting underserved families and helping us to move at least some people into a better position. But we've got to get to a point where we're all rowing toward that direction if we're going to have a healthy society. And frankly, Melissa, if we don't have a healthy society, everything else falls down around it. So I appreciate the support of everybody out there. And I hope folks won't let whatever their political leanings are keep them from supporting a very good cause.
So go to breastcancermarathon.com. If you register today, you avoid a price hike, which takes effect tomorrow.
But we'll be happy to take more of your money if you'd like to wait.
Yes. And mark your calendar for not this weekend, but next weekend.
When 8th through 10th.
8th through 10th of February, when the marathon takes over the beaches, there will be rideshare services, shuttle services. Go to the website for more. Be advised about traffic changes out at the beaches next weekend.
Carpool.
That's right. It's a big event. So again, breastcancermarathon.com. Donna Deegan, always a pleasure, and thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
In a moment, the debut of our new WJCT podcast, What It's Like. We'll take a listen next.
Constanji Brooks Smith & Prophet presents its annual Labor and Employment Law Workshop Friday, March 22nd at the Pontevedra Inn and Club, presenting topics for human resource professionals, managers, business owners, and corporate counsel. More at constanji.com or 356-8900.
Teachers, join us for a day just for you, created by teachers, for teachers. The 6th annual Teach Conference is Saturday, March 2nd at the Hyatt Hotel. Tickets are $35 and can be purchased at wjct.org/teach.
Anna Chavarin was an undocumented immigrant, single mother of four, working 65-hour weeks. So it took her a while to earn her associate's degree. Now she's going for her bachelor's, and her son is in college, too.
Her being so motivated to first get her GED and then be the first one to go to college gave me that motivation, like I got to do it as well.
Mother and son study together on The World, this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Today's cars are getting pretty advanced, and they make the roads safer and easier to navigate. But there's a catch.
When I first opened up, all you needed was a spray gun, a hammer, and a dolly. Nowadays, there's millions of dollars investment.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. New car technology and what that's going to do to car repair. That's next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Some of America's historically black colleges and universities are in crisis. A few schools have closed, and Bennett College in North Carolina could lose its accreditation this week. Enrollment is up, but in some cases, black students are no longer a majority on campus. HBCUs have overperformed. So why do they remain undervalued? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Most people don't go to psychiatrists where I'm from.
You have one of your soldiers laying there, and you have the person that is trying to kill your soldiers on the opposite side.
It wasn't so much that I felt guilty. I felt like it was impossible for him to love me.
I've never had the perfect figure or the perfect smile or the perfect hair.
Do you think people ever saw you differently because you have a disability?
Yeah.
Finally, this hour, it's a brand new podcast where people share what it's like to go through life-changing experiences. We are launching our new podcast today. It's called What It's Like. Lindsay Kilbride, our special projects producer, hosts and produces What It's Like and joins us now. Hey, good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations.
Thanks. I'm very excited that this is out now. It dropped at midnight, so we have a full season out, bingeable. Right now, you can download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes. Check out our new podcast and tell me how this was inspired.
Mm-hmm. So basically, let me back up a little bit. StoryCorps, if you don't know what StoryCorps is, it was in Jacksonville, Florida for about a month and a half, a little less than two months. And you may have heard StoryCorps before. It's a weekly segment on NPR, but they do a lot more than that. Essentially, it's a nonprofit. It travels around the country collecting conversations between people. So they have a mobile storytelling booth, booths, a couple of them, and they basically just have people come into the booth, talk for 45 minutes. Most of the time, the people know each other. They might be best friends or related or something like that. Anyway, so they were here for a couple months, and naturally, WJCT was a partner. And because of that, they give us all of the conversations. So I've been through hours and hours and hours of these conversations and pulling out the ones that I was really drawn to that were really interesting. They're very diverse. They're very people of all ages, people of all races, people of all different backgrounds who have gone through different types of things. And I've pulled eight that I was really drawn to that I think people will get something out of. And basically what I did is I paired excerpts of those conversations with a deeper dive, a follow-up, additional questions. And so we really get very deep into these topics.
There's a really interesting range of topics. You talked to, in episode one, a local mother named Patricia, who is trying to stay sober.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about the effect of addiction on her children and on her family. There's an episode with someone who was born intersex, raised as a girl, but now presents as a gay man. You talk to Army veterans who fought in Iraq and are dealing with the scars of PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I go through the list, someone with an intellectual disability, an undocumented immigrant, and even someone who escaped the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia.
Yeah.
How'd you find all these stories?
Listening through the StoryCorps conversations.
Just through StoryCorps.
Yeah. So most of them are local people around the First Coast. I mean, a couple of people are related to someone who lives in Jacksonville. So maybe one of the people weren't from Jacksonville or the First Coast. I think one of the people is from St. Augustine. But they're mostly local people, and they went into the StoryCorps booth just to have a conversation. And I think a lot of them found that they thought they knew where the conversation was going to go, but then they ended up actually going a little bit beyond their planned talking points and actually learning a lot about each other. And I think those were the best stories. And you really hear that in the excerpts. But then, so for me, I love storytelling. That's one of my favorite types of, you know, types of content to listen to. So I'm really drawn to things like The Moth. I think there's notes of that in this podcast. This American Life, this is not This American Life. It's very good, but that is like the gold star. But what This American Life does really well is it basically, you know, allows you to understand people a little bit better by getting a little bit of an intimate view of their life. And I think that's a really important part of storytelling. So there's notes of that feel in the podcast. And then one of my favorite podcasts is called Death, Sex, and Money. And what it does is it really goes into those topics that you are not supposed to talk about, death, sex, and money. And I think you get notes of that in this too, because some of the follow-up that we get in this podcast, it's really questions that people are curious about, but probably would never ask somebody out in their day-to-day life because you're not supposed to. But I think that breaking down those barriers in this podcast, it's really going to help. You know, you might not think someone who escaped the Khmer Rouge is that relatable, or someone who's intersex is relatable if you're not, but they are. And you get that from this podcast.
Right. And the intimacy of podcasting, I think, is why people like listening, because, you know, you can listen on your own time and take some time to really get into the narratives that are created. So wherever you get your podcasts, check out WJCT's new 8-episode podcast, What It's Like. Producer and host Lindsay Kilbride has some other things up her sleeve, too. So we'll be hearing from you again soon. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And we always want your feedback. Send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. 1A is up next. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, stick around for the Electro Lounge. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.